Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
The number 6 overall selection in the 2016 NHL draft belongs to the Calgary Flames. The number 5 overall selection in the 2016 NHL draft belongs to the Vancouver Canucks. The number 4 overall selection in the 2016 NHL draft belongs to the Edmonton Oilers. The number 3 overall selection belongs to Columbus Blue Jackets. The first overall selection in the 2016 NHL draft belongs to...
They call you Lady Luck.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
You might refuse to stay, and so the best that I can do is pray.
Welcome to a special live edition of the Tape to Tape podcast here on Sportsnet, the Fan 590, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ryan Dixon. I am a writer with Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, contemplating the future greats and heartbreaks, it is Sportsnet's man for all seasons, Mr. Everything, Gare Joyce. Gare, welcome to this brave new world where good things happen to the blue and white.
I've heard about these podcasts. It's an amazing, amazing time to see some poor 18-year-old looking like, you know, someone just shot his dog. You know,
who thought we would live to see the day where a guy is like, oh, I don't get to play for the team in the South. I have to go play for the Leafs. Come on.
Well, you know, it's funny that Austin Matthews managed somehow not to learn from Connor McDavid last year. For Austin Matthews to be asked about the outcome of the draft lottery and for him to say that he had mixed emotions, not a great start.
Well, we are, of course, going to dive deep on the first overall pick, the presumptive first overall pick, the fact that that pick is held by the lottery-winning Toronto Maple Leafs. We're also going to chat with the one and only guy who has been drafted first overall by the Toronto Maple Leafs. That is, of course, Wendell Clark. Wendell is going to be coming up in just a few minutes to chat with us. We're going to touch base with Darren Millard, talk about the whole draft lottery scene and how things went down there. Maybe he can tell us about who had the sweatiest palms when he was shaking hands. We're going to talk to Mike Trakos, a post-media NHL columnist, guy who's been on the Leafs beat for quite a while. And, of course, given there are two Finnish kids right at the top of this draft board, we're going to talk to Juha Wattila. He is a Finnish writer. Get the skinny on the guys who most people expect are going to go second and third. So, Gare, I guess before we dive into it with Wendell, I'll just ask you real quickly. You expect things to go chalk here then? It'll be Matthews, Line A, Puljujarvi, 1-2-3?
That's my thinking. I know that some people would put Lonnie ahead of Matthews. It's a minority opinion in the scouting community, but it is out there. I wrote a while back that I thought there was a 20% chance that Lonnie would be a better pro than Matthews. A few scouts that I talked to said, well, you know, maybe there's a 10% chance, maybe you're close to it. And the idea that someone who's drafted second or third ends up being a better pro, that does happen. But I see the Leafs going to Matthews, filling the conspicuous need of a first line center.
Well, one guy who knows what it's like to play a huge role for the Toronto Maple Leafs is the first overall pick from the 1985 NHL draft. It's Wendell Clark who joins us now. Wendell, how are you doing?
I'm very good, guys.
Great to hear from you, Wendell. I don't know if you remember this, but you and I went out to lunch with King Clancy back at the end of your rookie year. Do you remember that?
I do, and the pictures and the magazine and all everything, one of the last articles, I think, on King.
It was absolutely the last, and it was touch and go whether we were going to be able to put it together. But that was a lot of fun. It was interesting. That at the end of your rookie year is when we did this, and you know, I think that you skated into a different world than the one that Austin Matthews is skating into. What do you think the pressures are going to be that he faced that you didn't?
But the pressures are all the same, really. It's all the outside stuff that people generate and the media generates. But at the end of the day, the game is played on the ice, and doesn't whoever we take in that first pick is going to have the same hockey pressures. Doesn't matter the era.
Right.
And I think we have a very stable management now that will be able to handle it for the players to help him ease through that. He's not going to be in it alone to try to do anything himself, because the game's too good a game. You're watching the playoff games right now, and no, you know, the superstars don't run away with it. It's a team game, and so it takes a group. So I'm glad we have the management group that we have right now that are going to help the young guy and help our young guys pull it together.
Well, Wendell, you touched on that management group, which I do think people have had a lot of faith in. I mean, as a guy who played for the Leafs and is still, I'm sure, very much invested in the team, I mean, what does this day mean for fans who, I don't have to tell you or anyone, there's been some bad stuff going on in the city and around this team for a long time. I mean, for the Leafs to enact this plan that we're going to do this ground-up rebuild and then to get the bounce they get today, what do you think it means for the franchise and the fans?
Well, I think it means a lot, and you don't say it speeds it up to do it in a bad way, but it speeds it up in that you get that quality person at that level in that year's draft. You get to make that first choice and get yourself going more in the right direction. It can mentally help not necessarily, not always just on the ice, but also just how you feel mentally around the game. Hey, we got this pick. Here is our game. So everybody feels better about it. Even the players in the dressing room to the fans coming around the rink, there's a positive spin that goes. And anytime, you know, sports is a big thing that spins on positive energy, and no bigger place than Toronto that can spin negative or spin positive. And this can be a real start to the building that they're doing.
What, Wendell, what was it like moving out of junior straight to the NHL, and how do you think that transition will be different for Austin Matthews? You know, and him going from the Swiss League, a men's league.
Well, I guess I can't make the predictions who's coming first or not. I haven't heard the picks, but for any player that's coming, the game's way more complete now than it was. You know, our offensive players have to play as well defensively as they do offensively at times, almost all the time, actually. And in the 80s, you know, our offensive players got 150, 170 points and weren't as good in their own end. So the players today coming out as an 18-year-old, jumping into the league, have to be more complete to be allowed to play, you know, 20, 30 minutes. And so that's tougher on the young guys now than it was. When I started, you were allowed to make more mistakes as a young guy, probably. And so that's one of the tougher things. I think it's easier to start playing in Toronto as a rookie than it is to get traded to Toronto when you're 25 to 28 years old.
Right.
Because you start with it. You understand, hey, that's just the way it is. You grow up with it. But when you get traded here from Florida or California and you walk into the mosh pit of what Toronto is, It's a change for that player. He hasn't dealt with that for 8 years or 6 years in the league. And from the outside, you think you know what it is, but you really don't know what it is until you get right in the middle of it.
When you say mosh pit, you're dating yourself there. I think you were around just for the birth of punk, I think. But, you know, physically, it seems like the demands are different now, though, that the game – is faster and players are bigger. And, how do you think you would have fared coming at 18 into the league now?
I would have been fine. I think any of the guys that are strong are fine, because these kids are strong. They've been training with the game. So strength-wise, the maturity of the kid, it all depends on the maturity of the kid. I remember in when I got to Tampa, and Vinny LeCavier was drafted first overall, so I played with Vinny the first year, and, he was 6'3", 185 pounds. When he won the Stanley Cup, it was 6 years later or 5 years later or something, he was 6'3", 225.
Right.
So there was a lot of maturing. Players really don't hit their strength and maturity size until they're 22, 23. And so at 18, you're going to be strong, but you're not really man strong yet. So you got to go through some strength things. Connor went through that, being a light, very talented guy in Edmonton last year. And maybe that was part of the injury. You got a couple big guys leaning on you and you didn't spin off, and your body's not as mature and not as strong quite yet because you're only 18. So,
how about emotional maturity, though, Wendell? And you talk about Vinny. I remember talking to him when he was 17, 18, and he was 18 going on 30 in a lot of ways. He was a pretty mature kid. How important is that emotional maturity to get through the attention and the transition?
It can be a big thing, but you don't know that, and each player doesn't know that, even as management, to 100%. You don't know that till you see him in the position. Mm-hmm. And I think we have probably a great management group with the coaching staff and with Lou as manager. They protect the players a lot. They keep them out of certain things. You don't have to do certain stuff. No, they tell people, no, he's not doing that. So they take things off your plate for you until you mature and they know you can handle it, where maybe in some situations and some teams they'd throw you into the kitchen going hoping he can handle it. I think we got a very level-headed group, and they're going to handle it and see what everybody can do and watch training camp and stuff. And this is all long-term. They've been thinking long-term. We as an organization, I think you want to be good every year. Not necessarily are you always building for the Stanley Cup. You're building to be in the playoffs every year, so that when you do get the playoff runs and then you get a chance where everything's falling into place, you do win. But you're trying to get back to the spot where you're in the playoffs every year.
Ryan Dixon here alongside Gare Joyce on a special live edition of the Tape to Tape podcast with Wendell Clark. One last one for you, Wendell. It was a while ago now, but some young man here in a month or so is going to hear his name called. We all assume it's Auston Matthews, but who knows, as you said. But someone is going to have that Leaf jersey handed to him as the first pick in the 2016 draft. What do you just remember about that moment, hearing the Toronto Maple Leafs had taken you as the first pick overall?
Actually, you have less pressure than everybody else. You had the weight. You had the shortest wait.
Yeah, but, nice.
The greatest thing is you're as a player and you've played through junior and minor hockey and you finally got within 4 or 5 months, you're going to finally have your chance of trying out for something that has been your dream job. All these kids have been dreaming of finally getting to put on an NHL jersey and playing in the NHL. And once that draft is been picked, that's the first time they actually have their hands on that blue and white jersey. It's an NHL jersey, and that's just a great feeling for all those kids that get drafted.
Well, it's going to be one that some lucky young guy gets to feel again, or gets to feel for the first time very soon, just as Wendell did back in 1985. Wendell, thanks so much for joining us on this big day for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Wendell. We'll always have the Hot Stove Lounge, 1986.
That's right.
That sounds like an amazing place to be. Get me in a time machine and back there. Wendell Clark there. He was, of course, drafted from the Saskatoon Blades as a defenseman, and I don't think took a single shift on the blue line in the NHL. The Leafs moved him up to the wing, and, of course, he became almost instantly one of the best power forwards in the game. Folks, we are going to open up these phone lines because I am sure there's some excited people out there who just want to call in and let us know what a monumental night this has been in their Toronto Maple Leaf night. You can get us at 416-870-0500. 888-900-1-888-666-0590, *590. Sportsnet producer Matt Brown also caught up with a rather significant figure in this whole draft scene. It is Brendan Shanahan at the top of the Leafs hockey chart, and this was a monumental night for Brendan. Of course, a little disappointment last year, but much happier times this year for Brendan Shanahan.
First off, Brendan, congratulations on this one. We go back to 1987. When were the nerves a little more jittery, tonight or then when you were drafted?
Oh, different. But nerves are nerves. I think it was probably about the same. But, it was you're taking me back, maybe making me try and remember it. And I do remember feeling this nervous anticipation. But I'll say this. I sort of, in 1987, I expected to go second to New Jersey, and that's where I went. This was a little tougher just because there was no knowing if we were going to be first, second, third, or fourth.
You said you didn't have any lucky charms or anything like that like you did last year. Was there any fight with Lou, anyone like that, on how you guys came here? And were there any kind of superstitions that you guys had to get out of the way and just treat this as business?
You know, at first we weren't going to come, and then we heard that every team had to send a representative. So I felt it was my job to come, I've been blessed to be a pretty lucky person in life. So maybe last year going for outside or outsourcing in that department was the wrong thing to do. So this year I just, threw on a suit and just showed up myself and hope for the best.
When you hear the name Austin Matthews, what's one of the first things that comes to mind for you?
Well, obviously he's a quality player. He's got good size, plays center ice. He's certainly somebody who has earned the place that he is right now.
For you, I know it's been a short tenure as the position you're in with the Maple Leafs, but where does this rank right now for your time here?
You know what? We've had some really good days here in spite of the fact that our record has not been good. I think that we've been able to bring some real foundation blocks to Toronto. Winning the lottery is not something you expect, but we did it. Basically winning the Mike Babcock sweepstakes was a great day. Signing Lou Lamoriello on and having, not just signing them, but having Mike and Lou both come here, sort of endorsing what we're doing. The addition of Mark Hunter, I can't underscore how excited I was on that day. That might have been one of my most happy days, to know that Mark Hunter was going to be out scouting for us. And then to have a guy like Kyle Dubas as well. I could run down the list of the people that we have within the system that might not make the headlines of that we want to make, which is winning. But certainly as far as building blocks, they're important, and this is important.
Finally, I know you guys wouldn't say who you're going to pick, but do you rule out if there's offers that come for a first overall pick?
I don't think you ever rule, you don't turn the phone off. You listen right up until the draft, but I think everybody would say to you, it would be disingenuous for anyone with this pick to say that they were looking to move it. But that being said, you never turn off the phone no matter who's sitting there in the one spot.
Well, there you go, Leaf fans. Shanny's not turning off his phone, and there's no reason for you to turn off your phone. If you want to dial in and let us know what you think about the evening's events, you can get us 416-870-0590, 1-800-666-0590, *590. So that was, of course, Brendan Shanahan talking about winning the draft lottery. As he said, it's not really something you can count on. Don't forget, the Leafs enter tonight having just a 20% shot of actually getting the first pick, even though they did finish last overall, 30th in the league. That doesn't guarantee you the same things it did once upon a time. The presumptive first pick is Scottsdale boy Austin Matthews, and Sportsnet's Darren Millard caught up with Austin shortly after the results of the 2016 draft lottery were in.
What was that like to watch this drama?
Yeah, very, very nerve-wracking, but Yeah, I know. A lot of mixed emotions, but, you know, it's definitely pretty exciting to be a part of.
Are you more relieved now or excited?
I think a little bit of both. You know, it's nice to have a little bit of clarity. You know, nothing's set in stone, and, you know, there's still a ways away from the draft, so just trying to stay in the moment right now and, you know, enjoy my time here and focus on the World Championships.
How much did you look at the teams with the higher odds, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, like the Edmonton Oilers, and going on down the list?
Not too much. I tried not to really focus on that and kind of stay away. And, you know, whatever happens, you know, it'll work out for itself.
Okay, what time is it there right now in Helsinki?
Yeah, 3:30 something.
Okay, go to bed then.
AM, so, yeah, I'll probably head there soon.
Well, Gare's pretty early in the morning for Austin Matthews there, so you could blame him if he was a little foggy. But what were your impressions of the first things out of Mr. Matthews' mouth after finding out that, in all likelihood, he's going to be wearing the blue and white?
Yeah, well, Darren saying, you know, go to bed now. Austin Matthews seemed like a guy who was living his nightmare, right? For him to talk about mixed emotions, that did not really work out in this week when Connor McDavid was tapped and asked, you know, if there was any advice you could give to the players who are the presumptive top three picks, how to present yourself. And Connor McDavid said, smile. Austin Matthews didn't smile once. Like, I mean, you can understand that someone in his position might really want to play in his hometown.
Well, he's in the same position as McDavid was last year, right? McDavid
exactly.
Wanted to be a guy probably playing in his hometown.
Yeah. And really, I mean, he would have been a great fit in Arizona. Like, they have lots of emerging talent.
Yeah.
You know, but that was a long shot for it to happen. And you'd sort of hope that he would handle it slightly better, but what was it, 4 o'clock in the morning?
Sure.
It was after midnight, but he did look pretty bagged. He was in a tough spot, and the time delay just was sort of strange. It was like he was on a space station circling Earth, right?
Well, he's got a couple of months to collect themselves. I'm sure we're going to see a big smile on draft day from Mr. Matthews. On the line now from Scarborough, weighing in on this big day in Leaf history, we have Costa. Costa, what are your thoughts on how things went down?
Gentlemen, I've been thinking about this for quite a few months now. Now that we're in the driver's seat, I've heard rumors that Arizona wants this guy bad. I mean bad. They want to market him because they're building a new arena. This guy is from Arizona. And rumor has it that they're ready to give up their firstborn. Can you imagine? This is going to sound silly right now. I don't know if anybody has thought about this, but getting a Dylan Strome, a Max Domi, their number 7 pick in the first round of this year, and maybe throw in the first round pick next year. These guys are willing to give up anything to get this guy. Have you guys ever thought about, like, what Arizona, like, they've got some beautiful prospects, and Dylan Strome is a number 1 center. Like, that, if the Leafs had him last year, at that time, a number 4, they would have taken Strome over Mitch Marner in a heartbeat.
That one I'm not really sure about. I wouldn't go to the bank on that.
What happens if they give us, like, 5 players, like, in the first round picks for a guy like, would you guys even, as managers, let's say, I'm going to put you on the spot here, but would you give up, like, 5 name brand players, for that guy? Like, has the thought even crossed our minds? Like,
thank you, Costa, for throwing out we always appreciate a good trade scenario here. It sounds like that, Arizona wants him bad. I think that'd be a little rich for the Coyotes' blood, though, at that asking price.
Well, and they're an organization that's going through a paradigm shift upstairs as well.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's hard to really put much weight in the rumors that are heard out there, because, I mean, they have greater concerns off the ice to address before before making a trade like this.
Well, yeah, we all know that Arizona would have loved to have gotten the hometown guy, the home state guy. But let's be real. I mean, no one who is running an NHL team is going to go that far into the hole, even for a pick who appears to be a franchise player. I mean, we heard, I think, almost instantly about the Oliver Ekman-Larsson theories that, oh, if Edmonton wins the first overall pick, they need defensemen so bad. And, you know, so I guess some would suggest maybe one of the reasons Don Maloney was on the outs was because he said absolutely positively not will we do that. So, yes, people don't hold your breath about the Leafs holding Arizona over a barrel. Also on the line now, we got Sully calling in from Brampton. Sully, how are you doing?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for taking my phone call.
Good.
Yeah, no, just calling to share my thoughts. Very, very exciting day for the Toronto fans and the Leaf fans in particular, who have gone through so much suffering for so many years, and it's finally good to see something exciting happening, like winning the lottery.
How high did you jump, Sully?
I actually ran across the room with my little kids as well. We had a little party at my house, and really, really happy with the outcome of it. And you know what? Also excited for the opportunities, you know, this opens in terms of maybe potentially trading down. But if you have the first overall pick, I mean, you hold all the cards.
Well, we've had two Leaf fans on here. They're both trading the pick. What's going on?
Well, no, I'm not necessarily saying about trading the pick, but I'm just saying the possibility of moving down if the package is right. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that you have the first pick, you take the best player, and you run with it.
Sully, if the Leafs had ended up in fourth, would you have been willing to move one of your kids to move up?
No.
Okay. All right.
No way.
No, but
we
well, then you don't
really
have total
coming down.
You don't have total Austin Matthews derangement at this point.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Sully. Glad to hear it was such a happy night in your home. Yeah, Gare, I mean, I think we can probably pretty safely say that come draft day, it's going to be the Toronto Maple Leafs making the first overall pick. I don't think there's any real chance that this would be the kind of scenario where we'd see a blockbuster move at the top.
I think that you can say that the teams holding the first three picks will be sitting in place. I don't see any movement in the top three. At four, I think it's possible, but
well, still lots of other scenarios to play out, as you said, beyond the top three. We're gonna touch on all that stuff. We're going to get Darren Millard in here to talk about how things went down. You know, very nerve-wracking night for a lot of people at the NHL draft lottery where the balls were pulled. So make sure you stick around. Coming up on the other side of the break, all kinds of speculation on what we might see beyond the top three and how the rest of the Canadian teams might focus their attention as they try as well to turn things to a better direction. That's all coming up on the live tape to tape on Sportsnet, the Fan 590 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sidney Crosby shot pucks into the dryer in his basement, and Connor McDavid was shooting pucks in his garage. What's your secret?
I started to shoot those Coca-Cola bottles from the top corners, and we just wanted to do some competitions with my dad in my backyard, and we just tried to shoot to those bottles. And
welcome back to a special live edition of the Tape to Tape podcast. I'm Ryan Dixon alongside Gare Joyce. You are listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. That was Darren Millard talking to Patrick Laine, the guy who we think is probably going second overall. We're going to talk to Darren in just 2 seconds here. Leafs, the big winners, drafting first overall. We assume they have won the right to do so by becoming the first team since the 2010 Edmonton Oilers to enter the lottery with the best chance of winning it and walking away with that top pick. The Jets, number two, Columbus, number three, both those teams jumped up at the expense of the Oilers, who are slotted to pick fourth, and the Vancouver Canucks slotted to pick fifth, just running down the top 14, Calgary 6, Arizona 7, Buffalo 8, Montreal 9, Colorado at 10, New Jersey 11, Ottawa at 12, Carolina 13, Boston at 14. Darren Millard was there to see the whole thing go down. Lots of nerves. I'm sure a few sweaty palms while Darren was shaking hands with the executives coming into the room. Darren, what was the vibe there?
It's different. It always surprises me how intense the environment is. And this year, the situation was ramped up because of the 14 representatives actually being in the studio as the reveals were made. And the guys themselves, the general managers and team representatives that I had a chance to talk to after, they were shocked at how intense the mood was and the feelings were inside the actual studio.
Did Brendan Shanahan tell you what he was bringing? Or did Brendan say he was bringing something for Luck, or did he say that he wasn't?
He didn't tell me anything. I did ask him.
Yeah.
And he didn't answer it. He made a joke about it. But I know that he opted not to go into the room where the actual draw was made,
right?
Because he went in there last year and they didn't win. So he opted to change things up in that regard this time around. And he stuck to his guns in the draft lottery simulator, where he played it once and the Maple Leafs won. That was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I think. And he never played it again because he wanted to go out and hope that was good luck going into the process on that kind of thing. So I think that's where his good luck charm was he played it once. The Leafs came up in the simulator, so he took that as a good omen.
Well, how does it feel to be the host of Canadian Powerball?
that's basically it. Although I did say that Ottawa was the first, or Montreal was the first Canadian team, and Ottawa picked a couple of places before that. So a million miles, a million thoughts running through your mind. So I did get that screwed up. People have pardoned me because I don't know the Canadian capital.
Well, there is a lot to keep in order there. I don't envy on that count.
So
well, you know, it's different because last year you knew when that card came up, the gold card, that everybody else just moved down one spot. And this year, with three different draws and teams, we did a rehearsal this afternoon where back-to-back teams moved up. Arizona and Winnipeg both moved up. And we were like, okay, what happens now? Like it had the potential to be really, really confusing.
Well, one of the few people who were privy to the highly confidential info before it was made public was yourself, Darren. What was it like walking around with the knowledge of what had happened before the whole world knew, if only for a little while?
Yeah, it was about 25 minutes before we went on the air. And we were waiting because we thought we'd get it around 7:30. And nothing was happening. Nothing happened. We were in a back room. And all of a sudden, some executives came in, and they were at a photocopier. Like, I don't know, what are they doing? And they didn't say anything, and they came into the room where we were and put the list down. And you immediately go to number one, and you're like, wow. And I have I'm from Manitoba, so I have an affection for the Winnipeg Jets, and so the Jets at number two. And then you have to go into prep mode and try and figure out, okay, who fell, and try and get your thoughts around where it goes. And we're actually kind of fortunate because nothing really happened until that top seven, top six range, where things started to occur pretty fast. And then you realize Columbus had an amazing night themselves. So it was, there's part of you going,
I'm one of 30 people in the world that knows this right now, as opposed to everybody else waiting on pins and needles. And then once we got into the live show with Bill Daly, you kind of forget that you already know, because you're just trying to keep the show going.
Well, while we have you, and you mentioned that affection for the Jets, I mean, this is a team that already had some really good players, young players, either already on the team. We saw Nikolai Ehlers this year as a rookie. Obviously, Scheifele there. I think Trouba still has a bright future. And then, you know, there's guys like Nick Batan, Connor Hellebuck in the system. Their first round pick last year, Kyle Connors from University of Michigan. Now you add a second overall pick.
And you've got the Chicago pick.
And you've got the Chicago pick in the first round. Dano looked good. You got to think the Jets feel like, I mean, really, they probably arrived a bit early and raised hopes by making the playoffs last year. But, you know, big picture, this is a team that was building. They've got to feel pretty good about where they're at.
Yeah, I think last year was a really important year for them to make the playoffs, because that fan base was getting restless. They needed to see some progress beyond just being back in the National Hockey League. And this year was a real disappointment for them. They had much higher expectations. But you're right. Whether they want to continue to grow with this group of prospects, or they want to move some to try and acquire some more established talent. Kevin Cheveldayoff is dealing with from a serious position of strength. I got a chance to see him afterwards and talk to him, and he said all he wanted was to be in the top three, because he gets a player who can play in the National Hockey League next year, or else you're thinking that you probably odds on you're going to have to get some more seasoning. So he was over the moon just to be in the top three when they moved up, and then to finish second. I know last year Buffalo was absolutely devastated to drop one spot and pick second, but the Winnipeg Jets are thrilled to have that number two pick. And by the way, isn't it just pure Buffalo Sabres history? The way they the last 2 years they dropped one spot and have to pick second, and this year when they got the eighth pick.
Yeah,
they stay right where they were.
Right.
Like, if they could have done that one of the other 2 years, it changes the franchise's fortunes significantly. And then when they're at the eighth spot, that works out for them.
I think that there's a medical intervention, and Tim Murray is on some sort of emergency blood pressure med at this point. Because
it's just pure Sabres.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
But they have pieces. Like,
they do.
You know, I wouldn't shed too many tears for the Sabres.
So the Sabres had the longest face last year. Who do you think it is this year, Darren?
Probably Edmonton, dropping a couple, or the Calgary Flames would be disappointed to fall a couple of spots just because of that separation. But probably one of those teams, because Edmonton's right there, 13.5%, the second best odds. And if they can land Austin Matthews, you know that the Arizona Coyotes are going hard to think that they can pry him out of Edmonton with some pieces, defensive pieces going the other way. So I think Edmonton would be disappointed on the subject of not shedding any tears.
You don't have to try and read between the lines too closely to pick up that everyone sees the significant fall off after three. Shanahan said as much as well.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting that Matthew said it was a roller coaster ride, or Sidney waited that as a paraphrase. But I really got the sense that he was thinking that it was going to work out, that he was going to go to Arizona. But you were right, Gary. There's a significant drop off. At the start of the year, there was Austin Matthews and sort of a everybody else type model. But Puljujärvi and Laine have certainly closed the gap on Matthews and widened the gap between the rest of the field. What do you guys think of the Laine interview?
That was right where I was going to go. I was going to say at least he wasn't wearing a gas mask hooked up to a bong, right?
I will go on record, and as somebody that's been in this business for almost 25 years, that is top three strangest interviews.
Oh, yeah.
And I just out of respect for somebody that I'm forgetting, I'll say top three. Otherwise, I would go straight to number one as being one of the strangest conversations I've ever had with an athlete.
Well, it's funny too. I mean, it's obviously a weird setup, and we're across the continent, and it's, you know, 3 a.m. there. But, you know, we've heard these stories that, you know, this guy is slight head case, or, you know, he's not really like your normal straight ahead guy. And
he marches to the beat of his own.
Yeah,
drum.
I would say that reinforced that notion, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why at the end of the interview, I said, boy, I got to say, like, you're one cool customer. He's like, yeah.
He's pretty
confident about being able to challenge Austin Matthews for number one, too.
There is the touch of Ovechkin in there, you know, all the comparisons.
Yeah.
But in terms of attitude and confidence, and, you know, it's that the world revolves around them.
Gear, how many times where it's run through your head where you've been thinking, asking the interview subject, hey, would you mind sitting up and and not lying down for this interview?
Oh,
God. I just let it go, and we let it go. But yeah, I learned something about Patrick Laine.
Yeah, well, he is the ultimate chill player. There is
totally
no doubt about that.
And I'm thinking, what? I jokingly said to a couple of people, like, "What do you think?" And one representative said, "We'll take him." And their odds weren't very good to win, but they said, "We'll still take him if we get there."
I was just trying to imagine what the Toronto media would have been like if they landed number two.
Yeah, it's true. Oh my God!
Like, can you imagine Mike Babcock?
Yeah.
Coaching that guy.
I'm sure he had smoke coming out of his ears just watching that interview, just thinking, yeah, oh man, if I ever have to get my hands on this kid.
Or Lou. Not a Lou guy.
No.
I'm kind of wishing Toronto would have finished second.
Oh man.
just to witness that.
Well, it was an interesting night, and
where did you guys watch? Like, were you nervous? Were you excited? What were you thinking when it was coming down to the final three?
I thought it was going to be the Jets, to be honest with you. I did kind of think it was going to be Winnipeg.
Yeah, I played the simulator 10 times today, and the Leafs didn't win once.
Really?
Yeah, and 5 times they finished out of the top three.
Wow.
Well,
that's incredible.
We can. The simulator's been getting a lot of work of late, but as of tonight, you guys, everyone can pack them away and for another year. Darren Millard, it was an exciting night. Thanks so much for joining us in the aftermath of, as Gare called it, Canadian Powerball.
That's awesome. That's a great line. I'm going to tweet that.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, take care, Darren.
That is Sportsnet's Darren Millard. He was presiding over the NHL draft lottery. Coming back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk to Leafs beat writer Mike Trakos, get his take on how things went down. That is coming up next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
There are lots of guys that are going to do very well in this, but we earned this the hard way. It wasn't a whole lot of fun this year, but our guys and our coaching staff and our management staff did a lot of really good things here in Toronto, but this will certainly help.
Welcome back to a special live edition of the Tape to Tape podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network. I am Ryan Dixon, alongside Gare Joyce. That is, of course, Brendan Shanahan doing a little Irish jig tonight after his Toronto Maple Leafs won the NHL draft lottery. First team with the best odds to actually win it since the Oilers in 2010. The Oilers fall to number 4 out of the top 3, where everyone sees a big drop after that third pick. Not that anyone's feeling too sorry for the Oilers at this point. The other team that took it on the chin, the Vancouver Canucks, falling to number 5, while the teams that jumped up and are doing a little smiling are the Winnipeg Jets at number 2, the Columbus Blue Jackets at number 3. As Shanny alluded to, it's been a long, hard year for the Leafs. This is what they planned for, though, And it would seem that even this one thing that is out of their control has fallen their way. One guy who has been chronicling the ups and downs of the Toronto Maple Leafs for a long time now is Post Media columnist Mike Tracos. He joins us on the line now. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, Ryan, and nice talking to you as well, Gary.
Good to talk to you, too. Is this the biggest Leaf moment in your time covering the team?
Yeah, this has got to be this is what the last, I guess, 10 years were all worth, I guess.
Yeah.
There haven't been that many happy days, I guess, in Leaf land, and it's probably to their own doing. Poor management, poor coaching, poor play on the ice, but you know, now when you've got like the potential of getting Austin Matthews right now, combined with what I've seen and what everyone's seen in Mitch Marner in London, and what we've already seen with William Nylander down at the minor league level and at the NHL level, you've got yourself, and with Morgan Riley, a pretty good nucleus going forward. And it looks like, unless they horribly screw things up, and granted they have to get some goaltending help and some other pieces in there, you've got the building blocks, which should be a really good team for many, many years if all goes according to plan.
Let's get wildly speculative here, Mike. Actually, maybe not that wildly, but the name Steven Stamkos has obviously been linked a lot to the Leafs. Do you think them winning the lottery tonight and now looking at a future where Matthews and Nylander can be their 1-2 centers, they're both on entry-level deals for the next couple years. Obviously, Matthews isn't even drafted yet, so he's got 3 years to go. Do you think this significantly alters any designs the Leafs may have had on going after the big prize free agent? If that was ever so, for all we know, they had no intentions. But do you think if they did, this makes them sit back and go, maybe we want to spend those resources somewhere else?
I think so. I could see pros and cons in getting a Steven Stamkos because he would fill a kind of mentorship role. And we see in Edmonton that while you could have a number of talented young guys, if you don't have an experienced guy to kind of shoulder that load, and you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Matthews, Nylander, and Marner going forward. So having a guy that can score 40 to 60 goals every year, basically with his eyes closed, could help immeasurably. And he would be the captain in Stamkos, and that could help. But in the same sense, these guys are going to cost a lot of money, like the Marners, the Nylanders, the Matthews, even Morgan Riley getting a new contract now. There's just not enough money to go around where you can say, okay, we're going to spend $10 million on Steven Stamkos. Well, this team needs a goaltender. So if you pay Stamkos that money, maybe you can't go out and get a Frederick Anderson, try to trade for him. Maybe you can't get additional help on the back end. And I just think with all the kind of holes that this roster has, right now you've got a number one center in Matthews. You've got Kadri there as a basically 2/3 center. And you've got the option of putting Nylander at center as well. You really don't need a Stamkos. What you need is probably a really good number one or number two defenseman to play with Riley. And like I said, you need a goaltender as well. So knowing Lou Lamoriello and his history in New Jersey, I could see him kind of turning the focus to goaltending and defense rather than more help up the middle.
What do you think the having Matthews, you're automatically assuming that he jumps into the lineup. Does this make it less likely that Mitch Marner is with the team for the season next year?
Ooh, that's a good question, dear. I know you were at
that's
the
why
World
I
Juniors.
Asked it.
Yeah, I know you were at the World Juniors with me in Helsinki.
Yep.
I really like Marner's game as the tournament kind of went on, and it seemed like the more criticism was lobbied his way. He played a little nastier and a little better. And I've seen him already a couple times in London in these playoffs. And I think his game has grown to the point where he's definitely going to get those 9 games at the NHL level. And
yep,
maybe they loan him to the World Juniors because it's in their backyard in Toronto next year. And they kind of go from there. But I still don't know what to make of next season. Like, you're going to have Matthews, you're going to have Nylander and Soshnikov and Hyman, and maybe a Kapanen as well, and you're going to have a young team. Does that mean that next year you're still going to have those growing pains where you're going to finish in the bottom five and still kind of rebuild. And does it make sense to have Nylander, Matthews, and Marner all in that same kind of entry-level contract? I don't know.
If Marner isn't in your top six, then you can't have him on the team.
Yeah, but it's him going back to London doesn't help things either.
No, I know he is in the worst possible position.
He's a tweener.
Yeah, like you really hope that a guy like David Andrews with the AHL would say, okay, let's enact an exception rule here where the guys like Marner and players of that ilk can just play in the minors, because really that's probably the best spot for him, unless they want to send him to Matthews' old team and Switzerland. But going down to London again, I don't see any benefit to his game. If anything, you might stunt the kid's growth, because it's just a joke right now.
Switzerland's still there.
How easy. Yeah. So,
you know, I mean, listen.
Well, especially if he has to get stronger, right, or adapt to playing with men.
Yeah. I mean, I never believed Matthews would go to Switzerland. I just didn't see that happening, and it's turned out to have been a great option for him. I wouldn't doubt that there'll be others that follow suit.
Yeah, I just don't know if the Leafs, like, it's different when you're talking about Matthews, where no team controls his rights, and they're really no one's watching over him. I can't see the Leafs saying, okay, we're going to send you across the ocean and playing for a team where we can't really kind of see you on a day-to-day basis. Like, him being in London, that's a perfect scenario, because basically that's Hunter's team. And you're watching the kid daily, and you kind of got your thumb on him. Where to send him over to Europe, I know they didn't even like that option really with Nylander, and that's why they brought him over halfway through the year to the minor leagues. But yeah, they're gonna have some tough decisions, because while you're getting the Matthews, this team is still like many steps away from being that competitive playoff team.
So, Mike, take the Leafs out of the equation. What else stood out to you watching the lottery tonight?
You know, it almost erased a really bad season for Canada. Well, obviously, no Canadian teams make the playoffs, and now I think five of the top six picks are going to go to Canadian teams, and Winnipeg getting that second overall pick, I love that, because Winnipeg, you know, they had a season where goaltending really kind of prevented them from making the playoffs. I think if they had really good goaltending and maybe were playing in a different division, that was a playoff team, and some underperforming seasons from guys like Andrew Ladd and others. But getting a line A really helps them. And I think that team, I know the Hockey News had been picking them to be that next Canadian team to make that jump and win a Stanley Cup in like 3 years. Well, with the prospects they have, and Kyle Connor, who was a Hobie Baker finalist, and Jack Roslovic and Nick Ehlers and Jacob Trouba, that's going to be a really good team when you add a Patrick Laine or a Jesse Puljujärvi. So I really like how the Jets are kind of positioned right now. And like I said, when you're talking about six or five Canadian teams picking in the top six, I know there's some mystery after the top three, but still, you're going to get some good players, whether it's a Tkachuk going to Edmonton or a Chychrun going to Edmonton or other players like of that ilk. As long as these teams don't kind of screw things up, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, they all should all be getting better.
Of the three Western teams that are picking outside the three, you know, who intrigues you on that count? Do you see a possible match of one of the players, you know, that are the projected top 10, someone who's a particularly good fit? I know that Calgary might be looking at a defenseman. That would seem to be like a position they could go for, and the available talent is there. They could have their pick.
Yeah, I wonder what Edmonton's going to do at number four gear, just because it looks like, from talking to people, that it's either going to be Tkachuk or Pierre-Luc Dubois, really kind of as the best possible player at that four spot. And yet Edmonton, when you look at their lineup, they could really use some help on defense. They've got Darnell Nurse, and aside from that, they don't really have many other options. So do they trade down with a team that's maybe 5, 6, or 7 and pick a Ulevi or a Chychrun and do it that way? Or do they just even pick one of those guys maybe higher than they're slotted because they really want that? Or do they go with Tkachuk? And maybe that gives them the flexibility to trade a Jordan Eberle or Taylor Hall or someone like that.
You figured they have to be active and they'll be doing something.
Yeah. That,
they'll be talking for sure.
I wonder if even if they make that pick.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if that's just a chance for Peter Chiarelli to say, okay, you know what? Enough of these prospects. Let's flip this into some guy, some player who's young, but has already got the years under his belt and can actually help the team right now versus if you're picking four, chances are that player is going back to junior or wherever he was playing this year, and you're not going to see him make an impact for another 3 years. Well, Edmonton, I think, has got to make that step earlier, sooner rather than later.
It's a good reminder that just because we know the first 14 slots doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's going to stay there and things will play out that way. Still, lots of intrigue to unfold. Mike Trakos, NHL columnist for Post Media, will be following it closely every inch of the way. Mike, thanks for taking some time to join us here on The Fan.
All right, thanks, guys. Yeah, it's going to be a real fun draft. Can't wait.
That is Mike Trakos, Post Media NHL columnist. Gare, I got to pick up on what he was saying about the Oilers. What do you think? I mean, do you think they jump in with a defenseman? I mean, they're dying for help on the blue line. Or I thought Mike introduced an interesting idea. You know, do they trade down and try and add, you know, you slot down to number seven, knowing a defenseman you want is still there, and maybe you can add a 5-6 guy or something else in the process?
Well, I guess, yeah, in looking at this top end after the top three, when you're looking at those next 4, 5, 6 picks, I think there might only be one guy that plays in the league next year that's physically ready to play in the league, and that would be Chychrun
from Sarnia.
But I don't think that he has the highest ceiling. I don't think that he'll be the first defenseman selected. It's just that physically he's completely there. He's man-sized. There's just a question of how high his ceiling is and how much there is. I think that if Edmonton looked to move down, they'd have a pretty good shot at getting Chychrun at 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there. You know, I think for Edmonton, the priority is getting someone, getting some experience, an established player. They don't need more prospects. And, you know, that number four pick is not really, you know, if Jacob Chychrun plays in the league next year, if he were playing in Edmonton, I don't know that it makes Edmonton better.
It's, sure.
It might be okay for his development, but they actually have talent that needs veteran talent around it. So I can see that being the one pick in you know, of the teams in the top 10. That one is the most likely to be in play, I think.
So we've talked a lot about the Leafs, obviously the Jets, Edmonton. Let's just go through the rest of the Canadian teams, and we'll start at number five. Can we agree the biggest loser of the night might be the Vancouver Canucks? And I'll just set it up like this. You know, the Canucks are seemingly trying to do this rebuild on the fly. It turns out they're not good at being average even, and they fall. And it seems like, well, even though it wasn't, you know, they were not like the Leafs in that the Leafs were obviously targeting being down in the bottom, but here they are at the bottom, and now you've got this potential silver lining in, oh, we're going to draft a top three. You know, we all know there's a ledge after those top three. They end up falling to five. Just doesn't feel like there's a lot of good things going on in Vancouver right now.
It's funny, because when Jim Benning went there, you know, Jim Benning was a solid scout. He
absolutely
was like
with
one of the
best, the Bruins building that team
in Buffalo before that, right? He did an amazing job in Buffalo before he went on to Boston. So, you know, I expected that Vancouver would draft really well. And then I look at Virtanen, and I know so many people that were off him, you know, that would not have taken him where Vancouver did, and he was a pretty big disappointment. You know, McCann has been great, and McCann's actually a kid who fell during the season. You know, but he's completely lapped Virtanen as a prospect. So there's been a little movement on the scouting personnel on the Canucks since Linden came in. It's been a bit of a shift. They have Edmonton and Vancouver have the toughest picks in the draft. They really do. Like that is Canada's greatest guessing game.
Sure.
Everyone after the top three has some sort of knock. I know that Mike Tracos was talking about Tkachuk. Scouts that I've talked to wonder about his skating. Is it dynamic enough? Is his early burst really good enough to get separation in the league? And I would say the consensus is that right now he's not there on that count. And they're trying to determine, is he physically mature? If he is, then he's probably closer to a ceiling on that count. If there's a lot of development room for him there, okay, maybe he's going to get a more dynamic burst. I'm not picking on Tkachuk, but you can go through everyone like that from 4 through 10. Everyone has a question mark.
Sure.
And really, Chikorin, although I don't think he'll be the best defenseman, is the only guy who's physically ready to make that jump the next year.
So after Edmonton and Vancouver, we've got the Flames at 6. They had some luck there in 2013 taking Sean Monahan. Where do you see this team going? The next year they had Sam Bennett. I mean, I think they believe they have their 1-2 up the middle for a while. Is there an obvious spot for Calgary to go?
If I was going to bet right now, I would look at Ulevi. If he's there at 6, I would think that Calgary would go that way.
Defenseman playing for the London Knights.
Yes, and was the best defenseman for the Finnish team that won the World Juniors. And I mean, that doesn't happen every day that you have a draft-eligible defenseman play such a big role in what is, as they say, a 19-year-old's tournament.
So we'll keep running down the Canadian teams here. The next one that's going to pick after the Flames is Montreal coming in at number 9. The Canadians for a long time have been looking for size, skill, strength up the middle. I think it looks like, anyway, they may have got it sorted out with Alex Galchenyuk, but you know they would still love to get stronger down the middle. I know one guy you think could be a real riser who's sort of slotting in that area is Logan Brown of the Windsor Spitfires. Do you think he might be there for the Canadians at 9?
Brown is the one guy that I think might take a really big jump up in right now. I guess he's sort of slotted on people's list between 11, 12, and 15, somewhere in there. In looking at Montreal, you look at the Michael McCarron draft, right? They drafted like a great big centerman with limited offensive high-end skill. Like to me, McCarron, if everything works out for him, projects as a third line center.
Right.
I don't see him as a second line center. Brown was so good late in this season and in the tournament. Like he was great. I think he made a real jump up. he's going to be an interesting case. You know, there's even talk that he's still growing. He's 6'6 now. He could be 6'7 by the time the draft comes around. In looking at the scouting staff in Montreal, they valued size when they took McCarron.
Sure.
And this guy has all kinds of better cards to play than McCarron does.
Well, an intriguing possibility for the Habs after a miserable, miserable season in Montreal. The last Canadian team to pick in the 2016 draft, if things hold, will be Ottawa at number 12. Pierre Dorion has obviously had a huge say in who that team has been picking in past years, but this will be his first year as the GM. I mean, Ottawa's done some good things in the draft. I mean, they found Erik Karlsson basically in the middle of the first round. Mark Stone, Mike Hoffman have been really late picks. What do you see them doing in that area where you're just outside the top 10? Is there anyone that really intrigues you who figures to be hanging around?
By the time you get out of the top 10, you're into the it's pretty wide open.
Yeah.
I think that what might work there, I'm not sure he'd be available as Tyson Jost, right? The kid from Penticton, who was really good at Holinka. He was really good at the World Junior A Challenge, but then made a significant step up at the under 18s. Like really impressed there. That might be a fit, you know. Does Ottawa really have a young center who projects his first line? I'm not sure.
You could debate it. That's for sure.
But Jost projects, I think, safely to second. Well, he has second line upside. I don't want to say he's safely bound to be at least a second line center. That's sort of his ceiling, but that's important. You know, he's not Austin Matthews, right? He's not franchise center. You wouldn't profile him that way. You know, that's not his thumbnail profile. But I think Jost would be a really good player for Ottawa at 12.
Why don't we just zoom out as well for a second and give us a couple guys. I mean, you've been paying close attention, been at the World Junior, been at the Memorial Cup last year. You've already touched on a few guys, but is there a couple names of guys who you think people should know outside those top projected picks? And then maybe a couple guys who you think who are talked about as, you know, maybe going top 10, whatever, that you're not quite as sold on as maybe the rest of the hockey world is?
I'm gonna be tearing down some poor 17 or 18
yeah.
year old.
Be gentle.
The guy who he exasperates me in some ways because I think he should be so much better is Julien Gauthier, who made the Canadian World Junior team as a draft eligible. And physically, I mean, he is really, I guess his father was like a former Mr. Canada or Mr. Quebec bodybuilder.
Okay.
And this guy,
good genes.
This guy is like completely jacked. And he tested really well in puck skills and skating. At the CHL prospects game, the on-ice testing that Central Scouting did. So it looks like all the parts are there, all the pieces are there. And I thought he was good, you know, good, not great, but as good as you could ever expect at the World Junior. But you're always left wanting more. Chychrun was that way the entire season, right? That there was a level of expectation that someone physically turned out is it's going to play out on the ice. And it hasn't really for Julian Gauthier. And he actually fell pretty significantly, you know, from season start till now. So that's one guy who knows. I mean, sure. You know, do you take those skill tests, a stopwatch for skating, you know, agility drills, is he a guy that because of his physique, you know, he can jump in and play third and fourth line pretty quickly and learn the game more rapidly at the NHL level. He's an intriguing one for me.
Well, one person who is unabashedly over the moon about the Leafs getting the first overall pick is a guy, you won't be able to see him, but he's actually in a Toronto Marlies suit. I probably don't have to tell you any more than that, but I'll bring you fully up to speed. It is, of course, Don Cherry and Ron McLean. Here's what Don and Ron had to say in the aftermath of the lottery.
I was so confident the Leafs were going to win the lottery. I wore this here, and they won it again, and I wore my Marley jacket and the whole deal. Don't forget the American Hockey League. You can see great hockey down there. I spent 20 years in the American Hockey League. Player, coach, and general manager.
This is a photo of you and the prospects, and me, of course. Jack Eichel was hilarious, gave you a USA shirt because you'd made fun of the Americans, and I wanted to show Tyler Johnson tonight on Coach's Corner, and you wouldn't let me.
And there's Hannifin on up in the left there. They took him instead of Marner, but I don't know, boy.
That's the story. Marner's the only guy that didn't sign our photo. You and I each have this photo. Got Connor McDavid, Eichel, and no Mitch Marner.
All right, so what? All I'm going to say is Marner, I've watched him play for Don Mills, and he is dynamite. Not only to have the first-round pick coming up, they have this guy coming. That's another beautiful like this little guy. I remember Tim and I watching him in the GTHL. We were watching this here. His little guy to the left. This guy has got the magic hands, got the short stick. I know I like the long ones, but this guy has really got it, and they've got a good future in the head. And I'll tell you one thing, the Leafs worked at it hard, and they got it.
He has 37 points in 14 games in the OHL playoffs. The record's 51, Justin Papineau, and McDavid got to 49, almost got there last year. But
Don, just a little... A little excited about the way things played out on a big night for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Juha Wadila. Since there are a couple Finns projected to go high in this draft, Juha is going to join us from Finland. He covers all things related to Finnish hockey. That is coming up after the break on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I want to see you when the break is day. You gotta go, you gotta go, it's alright. But I wanna see you in the, see you in the light of morning. Hey!
Welcome back to a special live edition of the Tape to Tape podcast. I'm Ryan Dixon in studio with Gare Joyce talking about... Man, the biggest night in a long time for the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise. The Leafs win the draft lottery. The Leafs have the first overall pick. We assume they're going to have it when the draft comes in June in Buffalo, and they're going to select Austin Matthews. Who knows? But that's certainly the way we see things breaking. All the Leafs, quote-unquote, hard work, if you want to call it that, paying off tonight. The one thing that was out of their control did bounce their way, giving a nice boost to the rebuilding plan. As mentioned, Austin Matthews, certainly the presumptive first overall pick. The next two guys are expected to be Finns. So, of course, we had to reach out to the plucky Scandinavian nation and get someone who's been watching these guys closely and who has certainly kept close tabs on the NHL and lived in North America and covered national hockey leaguers. We've got Juha Wadila coming at us from, where are you in Finland, Juha?
I'm actually in Tampere, the hometown of Patrick Laine.
All right. Well, that's a perfect segue to, did you happen to see his interview with Darren Millard on Sportsnet tonight? Any chance you've caught that?
I caught that, yeah, for sure.
And can we assume you're in a different position than he is right now? You're not curled up in bed with your headphones on talking to us right now, are you?
No, I'm not. I was actually watching the Washington-Pittsburgh game earlier, so.
Okay.
It's early here.
Was that little interview with Darren Millard fairly representative of Patrick Lalonde's attitude and character?
I don't know. I think he was he's a good kid. He used to have problems when he was younger, character problems, but he's grown up a lot, and he's kind of gotten used to talking to media here. But I think he was, you know, a little bit, I don't know, shy or excited or nervous about what's going to happen talking to North American media. I don't know if it was live or not, but talking to him, talking to North American media in English, it's always a tense when you're 18.
Yeah. You think that there's a good shot that that Jarmo Kekalainen will take the best available Finn at three?
For sure. I think he will. Of course, he's going to take best available player. They always take a best available player. Even though Jarmo has been very cautious to drafting Finns or acquiring Finns.
Yep.
When he was hired to Columbus, he actually said that maybe the Finnish passport will be a problem for players because he's being too critical when they're Finns. But I think he's going to draft the Esa Puljujärvi.
Yeah. So, well, Jarmo's first big find in Ottawa was Sami Salo.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So yes. I mean,
ninth or tenth round or what?
Yes, it was way, way down there.
Last player in the entire draft.
Right there.
So, Juha, I mean, we know a little bit about these guys, but why don't you bring us up to speed? Patrick Laine expected to go likely to, I mean, you hear some dark horse chatter about maybe jumping up to one, but probably slots in at two. Jesse Puljujärvi at number three. Just take us through the kind of players these guys are and what you've seen from them so far.
First of all, Patrick Laine is a sniper. He's a sniper who can. We've lately seen that he has some playmaking skills ability, but first and foremost, he's a sniper, and that shot is not from this world. I mean, he can shot, snapshot, wrist shot, slap shot, anything you need from every point, and big, skates pretty well, not really physical, but can handle himself. And then, yes, Puljujärvi is more like a complete player. Not as good sniper, but more physical, plays more with his body. Also a good skater, also a big guy. So a little bit different kind of players, but that's about it. But Laine is, like I said, he's a sniper.
Did his father play when he was saying that his father was always beating him in the shooting competition? I'm thinking, like, geez, like, sign two for one or something.
No. He wasn't a pro player.
Okay.
How much excitement is there, Juha, for these two Finns to go this high? I'm doing this off the top of my head, but the highest, I shouldn't be doing this off the top of my head, but the highest Finn previously taken, is it Kari Lehtinen?
Well, no, I mean, Barkov.
Kari Lehtinen and Sasha Barkov were both second
number two. Okay. So, okay. But we've certainly never seen two guys go in 2-3.
No, Lehtinen and Joni Pitkinen were 2 and 4, but 2 and 3, and possibly only ULV of London going maybe 5th, 7th. That would be like.
Think there's a shot he goes 4th?
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't seen CHL players that much.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've heard, he's maybe the best defenseman in this year's draft class. So why wouldn't he? There is, of course, a chance he would be a 4th, and that would be like a jackpot.
Right. Well, he was so good at the World Juniors. I mean,
yes, that's true.
You know, he was their best defenseman, and the other guys in this pool, you know, Chychrun didn't make the Canadian team, and yes. Ioannis is the best defenseman on the gold medal winning team. So,
yes.
You know, there's a shot that he could be four.
Yeah, why not?
Why don't you tell us a little bit about these the years these guys have had, where they were playing, and if they, I mean, presumably, since we're talking about them in the context we are, Laine and Puljujärvi had great years where they were, but tell us where they played and how that went.
Well, first of all, Puljujärvi, he plays in a Carpet team, which was a two-time defending champions coming up this year. He had an up and down season, started well, then had like a 12-13 games streak when he didn't score a goal. Then, of course, the World Juniors, where they all light up the entire country and the entire country went crazy. And then he had got better and better. Like, he got more confidence from the World Juniors, even though there was a lot more attention, a lot more off-ice asshole around him. He got better and better. He played with the same line with Sebastian Aho, with the Carolina pick, who they played together at the World Juniors, too. And they were good. He wasn't that good in playoffs. Scored a few points, scored a few important points and goals. But he was good, but he wasn't really impressive. Unlike Patrick Laine, who was like, seriously after World Juniors. He had his good moments before that, but after World Juniors, he starts scoring and scoring and scoring and scoring. Ended up with 17 goals I think 42 games or something in a regular season. And then the playoffs were like just off the charts. He was the best player in the semifinals series, scored, 5 goals in 7 games, including one at time is 59-59 game time goal heading to overtime. And then he woke up his team at the finals of the game 4 when they were down 2-0 in the series, 2-1 in the series. He scored 3 points when they won 3-0, and then they just kept going and win the championship, and he was the MVP deservedly. So he deserved every trophy. He deserved everything. That was a hell of a spring for Patrick Laine.
Juha, who are you writing for these days?
Ilta Sanomat.
And can you leverage these two hotshot Finns into a trip to Buffalo to come see us at the draft?
I don't think so. I may have to stay here. And I think I have my summer vacation. I'm actually going to leaving the World Championships on Wednesday. To see Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine there.
All right. Well, you are entitled to your summer vacation, given how hard you work. Juha, thanks so much for getting up early or staying up early if you were already up watching the hockey game and chatting to us a little bit.
No problem.
Okay. Thank you.
That is Juha Wattila all the way from Finland talking about Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi, the two Finns who are expected to go at the very top of the draft. Gare, just a minute left here to wrap what has been a big night. I mean, a lot of sorrow in Leafland for a long time. Do you think we're here, we are living through the day when everything changes, or what?
I think every Leaf fan will remember where he heard that he or she heard that the Leafs won the lottery. It is one of those signature moments, which in saying that just puts everything else into
perspective.
Context. It was an interesting night. I've never seen so many miserable GMs and executives as the countdown was playing out, and Darren was delivering the bad news.
It's just like the Stanley Cup. At the end of the day, only one team, one guy is smiling. That's all we have for you on this special live edition of the Tape to Tape podcast. You can, of course, check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Sportsnet.ca. But that's it for tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This has been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.